colleagues, students, and alumni, thank you for joining me today to listen to the College of Human Ecology's third podcast recording. I hope you enjoyed the first two podcasts, which can be found at the College of Human Ecology's website. I look forward to continuing our conversation today and updating you on the phenomenal research, programs, activities, and extension taking place at the college. Today, in addition to updating you on all the latest CHE news, we'll also talk one-on-one with Professor John Eckenrode, director of one of the College of Human Ecology's leading research and extension centers. Dr. Eckenrode leads the Family Life Development Center, and he is here with me today to share with everyone the inroads that he and his colleagues are making in the field of family life. John, I'm so glad that you could come today to tell us a little bit about what is happening at the Family Life Development Center. Your center attacks some of the major societal issues that face children, families, and communities. And I'm really glad that you're coming to share some of the work that's going on at the center right now.
Well, thanks, Lisa. It's really great being here. I'm really excited about having this opportunity to let everyone know about some of the research that we're doing, as well as some of the outreach that we conduct to touch the lives of children, youth, and families in both New York State, but also nationwide.
Can you tell us a little more about what the center is and what it does?
Sure. Well, the center was established by the state of New York in 1974. It works to improve the well-being of children, youth, families, and communities. We focus on research, we do a lot of training, but we also do a variety of outreach and extension programs in the area of child maltreatment and family violence, youth development, HIV/AIDS prevention, children in residential care settings, as well as military family life, among other things.
I know that a lot of what you focus on is also the positive aspects, developing positive role modeling, positive approaches to health. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, that's very important to us. Yes, we deal with some significant societal problems, such as child abuse and neglect, family violence, but our approach to those issues is very positive and an asset-based approach. We want to build competencies of the children we work with, of the families we work with, and also have competent communities around these issues.
One of your really positive areas, and the area I think that has been probably the longest standing research area for the Family Life Development Center, is their Act for Youth program. Can you describe what you've done? I know you have some recently exciting news about the fact that you've gotten a major grant to continue this work. This, I think, was the underpinning for a lot of what FLDC has grown into through the years.
Well, we've been very excited over the last several years to really enhance our efforts around youth development. We started, actually, as a center that was dealing with issues of child maltreatment, family violence, and those kinds of issues, and we've been very successful at that. And some years ago, we made the natural evolution to do more work around issues of youth development. And we're very excited to have a continuation of a major effort with the state of New York called the Act for Youth program that enables us to effectively reach out and promote adolescent health and well-being and discourage risky behavior. The program brings together experts in adolescent development, health, education, policy, and prevention to work with communities throughout New York State, including New York City.
Can you tell me a bit about how the research that you're doing in these areas can, in fact, apply to help youth that are out in these programs and working?
Sure. A great example is the groundbreaking research we're currently conducting about self-injurious behavior among teens. The first papers from the project, which we believe is the largest study conducted on this topic to date in the U.S., will be published this May and June. One looks at the role of the internet in self-injurious behavior, and the other focuses on the prevalence of self-injury practices.
As a parent of two college students and young adults, it really is a worrisome behavior. Do you see this frequently among the youth that you work with?
It's certainly appearing more frequently among youth, and certainly has gotten a lot more attention in the media in recent years. But this could also be due to some increased awareness. And due to the growth of this behavior, one of our goals is to help schools identify effective strategies for addressing these issues.
Is there a particular age group which is at highest risk for self-injury?
We see that most self-interest behaviors begin around age 14 or 15 on average as a starting point and continues through adolescence, but can also continue into adulthood.
Are there any effective prevention programs?
Well, we're just beginning to investigate that now that some of the research is just getting started. But there's much interest among school districts, among medical providers, among school counselors for effective programs, and we're going to be working quite closely with them in designing these next steps and addressing this issue.
It really is very, very important, and I'm sure many of our listeners who are parents and grandparents can appreciate that this is a problem that needs attention, and it needs attention quickly. Can you tell me about other work that you do at the center that also focuses on families?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Our Strong Families, Strong Shoulders program was created through a partnership between the College of Human Ecology and the U.S. Army to help military families deal with issues like family violence, deployment, the return of injured soldiers, and family loss.
Again, this is another area that is so timely. With soldiers in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and throughout the world, how does your program aim to help blend these families back as the soldiers come and go in and out of deployment areas?
One of the things we do very effectively, Lisa, is to work with the providers in the military to provide training and outreach to military families who are undergoing these transitions. And these are very stressful times, both on the deployment side, the separations of both husbands and wives from their children and their families, but also when soldiers return, either injured or maybe not injured. One of our goals is to prevent the secondary stresses and problems that families have when they come back. Also, an important target for our work and the work of many dedicated people in the military is around the children. This is really a phenomena that we really need more work in terms of how does a child adjust to a new life with, for example, an injured parent. And we've been teaming up with some people at the Walter Reed Medical Hospital around some research and programs related to how children cope with these situations. It's a very important topic because, as we know, we really owe a debt of gratitude to these young men and women for the sacrifices they've made, and we're happy to do a small part in working with our military commanders and military service providers in helping make those transitions more successful.
I find it fascinating because we have a lot of news reports about family violence. For a while, there were reports about a lot of women being murdered by husbands who were soldiers and the effects of being in theaters of operation and in fields and in military battle situations, coming back to the home and not being able to separate their field experience from what they need to do and how they need to behave in the home setting. And I have to say, as the Dean of Human Ecology, I am so proud of the work that you are all doing, and I know from a national perspective that your work in the military is some of the most outstanding work being done today. Well, John, I just wanted to thank you again for joining me and for sharing the good news and the important work that's going on in the Family Life Development Center. I hope that we can continue this conversation on future podcasts, and I look forward to also sending other information and news reports out as your results come out and become published in the coming months and years.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'd be very happy to talk to you more and talk to our human ecology community more about these issues.
In addition to the impressive research and outreach that we've just been discussing, students are also active in other areas around the country. Just to mention a few, 15 students this spring will participate in the Capital Semester in Albany program. This program facilitates internships at the State Assembly so that students can get hands-on experience in public policy. Each student is matched with an assemblyman based on his or her interests and works on issues vital to the state of New York. This program allows the College of Human Ecology to train tomorrow's policy leaders. And a bit further south, 25 students will spend an urban semester in New York City, where they will take courses in multicultural affairs, work to help low-income schools, and intern at various organizations that range from nonprofit community groups to Wall Street. This urban semester introduces human ecology students to the invaluable experiences that New York City has to offer. Here in Ithaca, we are also offering classes that allow students to have hands-on experience in philanthropy. The College of Human Ecology has partnered with the United Way to teach students how foundations support valuable nonprofit work. Through a generous $10,000 grant from the Sunshine Lady Foundation, students will be able to act as foundation leaders in the philanthropy leadership class. Students have solicited proposals from the Ithaca community and will award grants to support deserving community projects. 18 competitive proposals have been submitted thus far, and the students expect to announce the awardees at an upcoming press conference in early May. For further information on the CHE programs mentioned in this podcast, please visit the New College website at www.human.cornell.edu. You can even download an MP3 of this recording at the website. I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Best wishes to all of you, and please keep in touch.